Hi, hello. My name is Robin Cao, and I'm your host for Queerly High Valley, where we talk about all sorts of stuff LGBTQ+ related in Lehigh Valley and beyond. And today I'm joined by Milo. Super excited to have you today, Milo. Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm so excited to be here. So hello, everyone. My name is Michelle O'Milo. Either or suffice. I use any and all pronouns under the sun. So if I look like a taco, you can call me a taco. I would say I am a queer advocate for youth and young people alike, especially sexual health advocacy, mental health advocacy, and an all-round artist that loves the arts in general.
That was like such a like fun and precise opening for yourself. Have you rehearsed it before, or did you just riff?
So funny enough, it became my like catchphrase over the years. Especially, I started using it as a young person at Soap Lehigh Valley, a youth and young adult drop-in space for teens and young adults. And it was really cool because at first they were like, yeah, we're going around in a circle, saying names, pronouns, and one fun fact about you. And at first I was like, okay, my name, I gave it to you, but pronouns, I use any and all of them. Like, it doesn't really matter. My gender is like fluid, is like water, it changes shape. So it doesn't really matter what you call me. I'll answer as long as you're not being disrespectful, of course. And funny enough, one of the staff members were talking about how their pronouns is spaghetti. And so I was like, oh, that's funny, because tacos was my thing at the time. So I was like, oh, well, if I look like a taco, you can call me a taco. And the one day I walked in with a burrito blanket, so it didn't and it just stuck with me ever since. And even as a staff member, it got into a point where the kids used to repeat it back to me, and I was just like, how did you were around me for too long.
I love that, though. That's awesome, because whenever anyone asks me like, who are you, I'm always like, I don't really know. Right. So I appreciate the intro. So when I was talking to you about like what you wanted to cover or talk about for an episode, the topic of like healthy queer relationships came up. So we're going to explore that today in this episode. I know you've done a lot of work specifically with young people around healthy queer relationships. Why does this topic feel important to talk about right now?
I would say, especially like this day and age, especially with everything going on, like, everybody is looking for community and to be with people. And I feel like healthy relationships is something that people should talk about more and be able to have those conversations about healthy relationships and also know the red and green flags when it comes to relationships, so they could either better prepare themselves for things that could happen in the future and or be able to actually feel comfortable with the people that they've been around. And I would say, especially since, like, as a person that loves relationships, whether they're platonic or romantic, it's nice to know that you have people who genuinely care about you. So in a sense, you feel calm, you feel collected, and you don't feel like anything, in a sense, is wrong.
Yeah.
So in a sense, being able to have those conversations and be able to talk about healthy relationships is like the number one vibe.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You brought up red and green flags in relationships. For people who might not be totally aware of what that is, can you give us a little bit of information about what those are and how people might be able to use them in their own relationships?
Yeah. Red and green flags can look different to a lot of people. Sometimes it can be something that is literally in your face, like someone yelling and screaming and being violent. Or it can be something so hidden that you can't even see, like emotional manipulation, telling you that you look amazing one moment and then pretty much saying something different behind closed doors. So when it comes to red and green flags, I would say it depends on the relationship that you're looking at. So platonic relationships have different boundaries than romantic relationships, because you're not going to do the same thing you do with your best friend that you're going to do with your spouse. And green flags also, in the sense, are the same way. Green flags look different in romantic partners than they do platonic partners or even family members. A green flag from a friend, it could be you guys joking around about how tall and or short you are, whereas that could be a red flag from a partner. and or vice versa. So it all depends on the person and, in a sense, the relationship that you're looking at. Mm-hmm. But I would say the number one thing a relationship should have, in a sense, would be comfortability and for you to feel comfortable. If you feel, if any way, shape, or form uncomfortable within it, then there's something about the relationship you should look at and reevaluate.
Yeah, that's super good advice. And I think that it really just goes down to, like, trusting your feelings and, like, how you're feeling about something, even if you don't have the words to, like, express exactly what it is yet. I definitely can see how that's even just, like, recognizing uncomfortability as being really important. My next question kind of folds well into that. I just feel like it does seem a little bit harder to talk about relationship dynamics or complicatedness, or even towards the side of like toxic or even abusive dynamics in LGBTQ plus relationships specifically. Do you think it seems harder? And if so, why? And if not, then what are some of the things that you think might make it difficult to talk about LGBTQ plus relationships specifically?
It's definitely a little harder because there's different things at play that in a sense are, I wouldn't say a boundary, not a boundary, like a struggle in a sense. There's the fact that, like, you guys are, in a sense, like, let's say we say in a generalization of, like, a queer relationship, you guys are queer, so automatically that's a strike against you. You guys could be people of color, so that's another thing you have to worry about. So you have to worry about being a person of color and also being queer while trying to navigate a relationship that's also kind of looked frowned upon within, like, the community and the spaces that we live in. So I can't say it's been, like, hard. It's been a struggle, but something that could alleviate that struggle is the communication piece, because communication is, like, the number one thing in all relationships, whether platonic, romantic, or familial, that creates the safe space, that creates the boundaries, that creates opportunities to learn and grow with each other. Because if you don't have that communication piece, then everything that you're working on can go downhill. You guys will end up arguing more. You won't understand each other, or no one's going to understand each other if you don't talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think prevents people from maybe being more open with their communication? Because I think just like myself personally, even thinking about just like, I think that I am not always like super upfront with like how I'm feeling, even just with friends, because I think that a lot of the ways that I grew up, I think, was kind of around like you just try to make other people comfortable or like be nice to other people, which is not a bad quality. But I do think that sometimes I've seen it for myself and I've seen it for other people, like sometimes people put trying to make other people comfortable over like that honest communication. So I appreciate you bringing up the communication piece, because I think that that definitely helps. So back to my question, why do you think people might not always be able to or feel comfortable like communicating directly?
I'm gonna also talk from like my personal experience, because everybody's experiences are different.
Yeah, for sure.
But I can say that it kind of can come from an underlying fear of the unknown, like the fear of rejection, the fear of the other person's response, mainly. Whether if it's like, oh, they're going to say no and turn me down, or oh, they're going to lash out because X, Y, and Z. So I feel like it's the fear of not knowing is what kind of stops people or deters people from having that conversation or being able to be more open into having conversations. Even when it feels like you can and like you love this person and like you understand each other wholeheartedly, but sometimes like it's scary to have conversations. It's similar to like trying to ask a teacher for help. Sometimes you don't really want to do it in front of the class because then it will make you feel weird. So I feel like it definitely comes from like underlying fear, and sometimes it's hard to get over it. So what does it look like to try to find different ways to communicate? Whether it's like, I'm going to send you a text message that's going to get sent to you 2 days from now and it's already written and set into stone and it's going to come to you, and I don't have to worry about like X, Y, and Z because I already sent it, already written down. Or what does it look like if a situation does arise to take a moment to step back and recollect your thoughts? Because sometimes you end up overthinking because you're scared. And you end up thinking of all the different outcomes and what could happen instead of just like, oh, wait, if I just ask, then I know what's going to happen.
I super appreciate you bringing all of that up, especially like that element of like fear of the unknown. Because I like now that you've brought it up, it does make sense that like communicating directly is like very vulnerable because in a lot of areas of our lives, we can't like always be like 100% direct. Like I'm just thinking about like in a workplace, like you can't be like, I hate this part of my job. Well, right. I mean, you could, but
you could.
It might not be socially acceptable. And so being like completely honest with somebody can feel really vulnerable. And I felt that connection to that vulnerability and what you were saying about like fear. And I definitely see that show up a lot in like queer relationships specifically. And sometimes I think that there might be a connection to like, at least for me, in a lot of even like platonic relationships, like there's an idea of like us against the world kind of thing, which can be fun and also like feel really comforting, but then also can be difficult for when like there's like internal conflict. When like you brought up, like when you are facing a lot of different areas of marginalization, it can sometimes feel like the world is against you. Have you like ever experienced that dynamic yourself or seen it for other people, like us against the world kind of thing?
Yeah, I would say I definitely like felt that 1,000%. Mm-hmm. I've definitely been in situations where I felt like it was a like us against the world situation. And I also have been in situations where it used to be a us against the world situation and then it felt like a us against each other situation.
Yeah.
I feel like it also could come from like trauma.
Yeah,
and could stem from trauma too. So it's like you prepare for the good times with the person, but you can't prepare for the bad times.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to like the thought of the us against the world mentality, you're preparing for all the good stuff that could happen because you guys have a common enemy or a common goal. Whereas you don't prepare for when you guys have arguments. You don't prepare for when somebody's emotionally not available at the moment. And in a sense, those moments is what causes the turmoil because you can't prepare for that. It just happens because life just moves and does what it wants to do.
Yeah. I've never heard it articulated like that, but that like makes a lot of sense. And definitely connects to that idea of like us against the world kind of thing, versus the realities of relationships always being like layered and complicated and there's elements of compromise always. So just like shifting gears just a little bit, what do you think dating is like for queer people in the Valley right now? What are some of the challenges people are facing?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I could say like also as a queer person in the Valley, like on the dating scene, it's hard. Not gonna lie, it's really hard. Apps, trash. I can say what also kind of is like deterring deterring a lot of people is that not a lot of people in the Valley are also outwardly out either. And the community that is out, in a sense, everybody already knows each other. So it's like one of those moments where it's like, I know you, so I'm not going to go out my way to try to pursue you because I literally like grew up with you and we both were like, we both had the same gay awakening. Like we can't be in a relationship if we both were there together. Like, sorry, not sorry, girl. And it kind of sucks because it's really small because the community is very small. And I can say it feels like a lot of the people that are not outwardly out, they're scared to come out because of everything that's been happening and going on. So it sucks that the community itself is pretty small. Everybody knows everybody that is out. And then I don't like using the term DL because in a sense they too matter because in a sense they're trying to explore and like understand who they are as a person. But even within that community, it's also harmful for the people that are out because they want to pursue relationships and want to thrive and in a sense be public about things, but sometimes they can't because the relationships that they are with some people. So it's kind of hard out here. Circles are very small.
I definitely get that. We are already at a break time, but I'm excited to, when we come back from a break, talk a little bit about ways that we might be able to make the community in the Valley a little bit easier dating for LGBTQ plus folks. So I'm your host, Robin, and we'll be back.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m., Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. This is Robin, and I'm here with Milo talking about healthy queer relationships on Queer Lehigh Valley. So we were just talking a little bit about the current landscape in the Lehigh Valley, some challenges, the community in general being pretty tight-knit slash, like, everybody knows everybody. And then I love that you just said the apps were trash.
The apps are trash.
For people so who, bad. Like, because people of all different backgrounds and, like, generations listen to this, I would love just, like, a snapshot of why you feel like the apps are not doing it for us.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, prime example, so some of the apps are, in a sense, like, I want to say gender-based. So you have, like, Grindr and Sniffies, which is geared towards, like, MSM. And then you have Her, and there's probably another app out there somewhere that's geared towards...
Maybe, like, sapphic people.
Yeah, sapphic people. Lesbians. Yeah, lesbians. Yeah. And, like, in a sense, you have those two apps that are kind of geared for, in a sense, that section of people. But downside, you get on the apps, and it's literally the same five people liking each other because there's only, like, 12 people on this app, and not that many people either know about it, either... the wrong people know about it, because then why are you on the app for sapphic love and there's men are, like, straight, cishat, like, you're on Tinder. And I'm like, I'm not on Tinder. I'm supposed to be on a sapphic site. Where's the women? So it's weird because either, A, the wrong crowd is on the wrong app, and then when you're on, like, quote-unquote, the right app, there's nobody on it.
Yeah.
So then it's like, how are you going to meet people on these apps if no one's really on these apps because everybody all thinks that the apps are bad?
Yeah, that's so fair. If anybody is using an app, like, do you have any tips for making the experience less bad?
Oh my God, yeah. One of my things is I understand a lot of people do the judging the book by the cover photo or the first three pictures of people's thingies. Sometimes you have to open a book and you understand that sometimes the content of the book is better than the cover. And so after people, in a sense, I don't want to say get over it, but pretty much get over that fact and actually, like, try to initiate conversations and, like, actually genuinely get to know each other or try to get to know people, you will have more of a genuine connection with people and more success in meeting new people to either be friends with and or relationships down the line, because you're going to end up getting used to trying to have conversations with people, and then eventually you're starting to build what? Communication skills.
Yeah.
And if you got the communication, then it's going to take you a long way than you not having the communication. And it's okay to be scared, but if you don't take the risk, if you don't send that text message, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah.
Who knows? Billy Bob might want to text you back. And Billy Bob's phone's disconnected, and you just got to text them first so they can get the notification.
Yeah. I love that. That makes a lot of sense. And I also, like, appreciate that you brought up, like, sometimes, like, entering the connections that you make on apps, like, a little bit more open. Because I've made friends, like, a long time ago when I used to be on apps. I've made a few friends that I've kept for a really long time where, like, we had maybe gone on a date and, like, was not romantic vibes. But I was like, you're cool. And this was, like, a nice connection. So, like, I do definitely think that, like, when I, in the past, have approached relationships more, like, I might meet other LGBTQ plus people, that it has definitely gone a little bit better. I've also, I mean, I haven't been on the apps for probably like 4 years now, but like when I was, I also, there was a lot of like, kind of like pushiness towards relationship stuff. And I felt like when I met people who just wanted to talk, that that felt like less stressful.
Yeah. And I feel like nowadays there's also the really push of the hookup culture too on that app. So it's like, oh yeah, I'm a queer person on this queer app, and everybody, all they want to do is hook up. And it's like, you don't want a genuine connection. You don't want to go get coffee.
And that's hard because, like, it's great for people to have that space for, like, being able to hook up if that's what they want to. But then also, like, there's a whole range of, like, relationship slash connection desires between hookup and, like, committed relationships. So it's, like, hard to sometimes communicate, this is what I want, this is what you want, let's see if they match up. So
yeah,
I totally get that. And I think that apps kind of sometimes promote that. I mean, some apps are designed just for that. Like,
right.
Grindr is mostly meant for that.
Right.
Though I have a friend who met their husband on Grindr, which I think is really funny. But, I mean, good for them. Do you have any tips for people who are looking to, in general, like, apps or no apps, like, try to build healthy relationships, whether they're platonic or romantic?
One of the things that you should definitely think about when it comes to building relationships is also learning about yourself as a person. If you don't know what you like, if you don't know what, in a sense, like, are your triggers and what startles you and what can make you angry, it will be harder for you to make a connection with somebody else because you can't tell this person, you could tell somebody, yeah, I'm allergic to cherries, but are you going to tell them that you're deathly afraid of spiders? And if you see a spider, you're going to do a backflip and run out the door. Because then when it happens, they're not going to be prepared for it. But you also never told them that.
Yeah.
So if you don't know what you like, what you don't like, if you can't voice, in a sense, your hard boundaries, your hard yeses, your hard nos, then you won't be able to communicate that to another person. So they won't know what lines to cross or what is a go and what's not a go. Because same thing with, like, romantic or platonic friendships or, like, relationships in general. If you don't say, don't do that, no, Tommy, don't eat my last cookie in the cookie jar, the possibilities are endless. They could eat the last cookie in the cookie jar and throw the cookie jar out the window. You didn't say anything about anything. So you have to, in a sense, try to voice what you already know about yourself to another person so they, in a sense, know what not to do.
Yeah.
But also could learn you because then they'll be like, oh, word, you're opening up to me. Then I could open up to you and vice versa. Because sometimes people are going to be in a stalemate and be like, yeah, I'm not going to say nothing until they say something.
Yeah.
And then what's the whole point?
Yeah, it's hard to get to kick that off sometimes, too, to, like, know that you got to start talking about the thing so that people can actually know what you're feeling and stuff. I love that reflection of, like, reflecting on yourself being, like, kind of the first step for anything. I personally have in the past, I don't reflect as much as I should, but in the past, I've done a thing called a want, will, and won't list, which usually were used for, like, sex ed kind of stuff, but you can use them for relationships too. So, like, it's like a Venn diagram of, like, here are things I want in a relationship, here are things I won't. Like, that's my hard boundary. And then, like, a space for, like, will. And I personally found that helpful because it helped me understand, like, where are my, like, boundaries and then where am I, like, flexible. Because I feel like sometimes I've seen myself get upset, I've seen other people get upset when, like, you realize somebody crossed a boundary that you didn't totally know you had. And then I try to, like, learn from that and be like, okay, I know that if somebody does this, it's going to make me upset or something like that.
Sometimes, like, boundaries are one of those things that, like, constantly grow and change too.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
You grow and change as a person.
100%.
And it's, like, one of those moments where, like, if a moment does pop up where you just realize, actually, I don't like that. What does it look like to talk about it later on and be like, yeah, in the beginning, I thought it was really cool, fine, cool, and collected. But now it's something that I don't think I could ever do again. Hashtag love.
For sure. What do you think are there things that you think that we can do as, like, a broader community to, like, help LGBTQ plus people, like, have more space to find romantic relationships?
My number one thing is, in a sense, more spaces, like, tangible physical spaces for queer people to be at.
Yeah.
That also fosters that type of environment to where they can potentially, like, grow relationships, whether platonic or romantically, whether it's like, oh, we're doing a random speed dating event for queer people, boom, or hey, we have this random, like, chill space you go hang out at and meet, like, your own friends and stuff, and or what does it look like to try to push more togetherness within community, and what does it look like to also look at what already exists and what needs to change in order to pull more people to these events and or spaces. because I feel like what sucks is that sometimes we have like amazing events and things happening in the Valley that people would love to go to because people definitely talk about. Downside is that either they don't know when it's happening or they find out too late, or they're nervous that their community circle or quote unquote their people aren't going to be there. Downside is that actually everybody's your people. You just gotta go and see. So in a sense, it would be like highlighting the spaces that already exist, elevating those spaces, and also creating new spaces where people can create those emotions and be in those vibes.
That totally makes sense to me. I definitely think that, like, for a long time, LGBTQ plus people, like, you can always use more spaces. I think all people, honestly, need more spaces to just hang out. It's hard to find spaces in the Valley and beyond where it's there's not like a pressure to buy a thing. Which is like usually I just go for coffee shops because it's like a lower lift. But even that is a barrier for some folks. I really do like share that desire for like more spaces to just be a human and be able to like meet people organically. Because like I don't even, I mean, I think the places where I've generally met people are like arts related stuff. because it's like generally leans a little bit queer. But yeah, I've definitely reflected on wishing that we had some more like low-key queer spaces, because like super happy that like we do have like some queer nightlife stuff and like Vogue. I think that's the only gay bar.
I think so, because there used to be a lesbian bar, but I think they closed.
They're definitely closed. That was Diamonds. And there it was another one too. But and then there's some other like late night stuff. But I think that it's awesome that those exist. But there's like a whole genre, myself included, of like gays who don't stay up past like 9.
I wish there was like space that, like, I also think about places that already exist now, and it's the time frames that they're open. Like, girl, I got a job too, so what do you mean? I want to find my community, but I have this 9 to 27 to go do. And by the time I get off of work, you're closed. Or by the time I go to work, you're just opening, and I'm not going to be able to be in those spaces. Hard. So it's like, what does it look like to find or create space that's like a regular chill spot, but like late night where you're just reading a book in a corner with a bunch of other queer people reading books in the corner. Like different things like that. Because I would love to have more spaces. Like I think about the Bradbury Sullivan Center. Amazing, immaculate little community space. Downside is that their time frame, it's like earlier in the day. And some people just be getting off of work at 7 o'clock. And you're closing at like 7:30, 8 o'clock because of some groups. So it's like, dang, I would love to be a part and go to these groups. But also, the time frame isn't working out for me. We need more spaces like that all the time.
Yeah, I totally get that. In Lancaster, they have a really cool place called the Midnight Oil. That's a queer-run gaming, like board games, books, late-night coffee house. And it's really fabulous. I, like, want to copy-paste and put one in the Valley. But I just echo what you said about, like, a need for more spaces. And I think if there are anything else, I think I would just want our community in general to encourage like healthier relationship behaviors, because I think that sometimes some of the extremes of queer stuff are like kind of normalized. Like people talk about like U-hauling for like sapphic relationships where people move in after like a week. And like as somebody who's done that, sometimes it works out.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
But also, you know, I think having a little bit of like being able to call our friends in and be like, hey, like, are you okay? Like, you know, helping people work through whatever they want in a relationship.
I also wish there was, like, more spaces where people could open up and talk about any subject and, like, topic. And in a sense, like, vent sessions. Because life be lifing, and people love to talk about some of the stuff they got going on. And it kind of sucks that, like, there's not a lot of spaces for that. And if there is a space for it, it's, like, designated to only certain things. So it's, like, if there's more space to have random conversations. And, like, we could be queer and talk about plants all day. Then that would be great. Or hard-hitting subjects like the government and whatever's going on with whatever they got going on. We don't talk about her right now. She's in the corner.
I definitely feel that. Well, this has been really awesome. I super appreciate all the, like, different relationship insight that you shared. This has been Queerly High Valley, and This was my guest, Milo. Where can people find more of your stuff? Do you post stuff online or anything like that?
Yeah. So feel free to follow me on Instagram, Milo_theflybro. It's great. We're doing sexual health content, funny memes and sexual health content, healthy relationships, and just overall vibes.
Awesome. I'm Robin Gao. This is QLV.